Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Joy Bracey. Joy attained her Doctorate of Education in Executive Leadership at the University of Holy Cross in New Orleans and her Master of Education in Counseling at the University of New Orleans. She spent her early career in various leadership roles in the hospitality industry, then followed her passion for helping others by pursuing her master's in counseling and providing mental health services for New Orleans' most vulnerable women and children. Joy uses her background, education, and experiences to spread the message about the life-changing impact of self-love and mindfulness. She's an adjunct professor of self-awareness at Teachers College, Columbia University, and is the host and creator of the Easy Way Out podcast. In the episode, Joy shares the advantages to weighing over 300 pounds, how she coped and continues to cope with food noise, how she broke free from emotional eating tendencies, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode. I'm Brooke Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like a million bucks. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Hi, Joy. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Investment Podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited for this conversation. I think you are going to enlighten us all with your wisdom and your own personal story. And I would love if you could start off by telling us a bit about your background and specifically what led you to start your podcast. I love the title. It's The Easy Way Out, but way is spelled W-E-I-G-H. As a former English teacher, I love plays on words. It's great name. I don't know if you thought of it or someone else, but whoever thought of it, fantastic. You did. Okay, perfect. Tell us a bit about yourself and what led you to this point in your life.
So thank you so much for having me. I am very excited too. I think that people need access to this conversation that we're about to talk about is going to have so much in it for people that want to lose weight, want to be healthier, want to have that mind, body, spirit thing happening. And there's not enough access to the information. I think so much of what our society is based around this diet culture and obsession with thinness and beauty standards, that what is really important gets lost in all that. And most of us are reasonable people that just want to be healthy. We want to be normal, so to speak. We want to have balanced lives, and we're not looking for extremes or quick solutions. And that conversation is just not being had as much as I think it needs to be. So thank you for making this space.
Absolutely.
So I am a licensed professional counselor. I come from a background of more than 25 years working in the addiction treatment and mental health field. I'm a nonprofit CEO in an addiction and mental health agency for people that can't afford to pay for the services that they need. I also do coaching and counseling in private practice. I'm a public speaker and a writer. I'm working on my first book.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And there's a lot. For me, it is really mind, body, spirit. I do teach self-love, inner critic healing, and self-awareness on online and in workshops and retreats. And I learn by teaching. I've always been kind of a natural leader. I was that kid who had a lot of chaos at home, and my way of coping with that was to be perfect. And so I thought, you know, I had to get straight A's, and I was picked for things and had to get the awards, and, you know, I was nice to everyone. Everyone had to like me because I had to people please and be perfect to try to control my life experience as much as possible, since things were very much beyond my little kid control. And So as a result, I grew up into an people-pleasing perfectionist who used food to cope with life's stress. And at the same time, developing my career, I was developing these leadership skills, and I ended up getting my doctorate of education in executive leadership. So a lot of things collided for me. I had lost weight many times. Like anyone listening who struggles with obesity, I lost 20 pounds more times than I can count. I most definitely have lost more weight than you weigh over and over again. The last time in 2015, I lost 80 pounds and then gained it all back. And I decided at that point, I'm just going to be, and I say this word to reclaim the power over it, I'm going to be a fat girl and I'm going to love it. And I'm going to just be fat for the rest of my life. And that's that. I learned how to love myself and embrace my curves and embrace body positivity. And Lizzo came along and made the anthem, and I was like marching along. And that was how I felt. I felt like my body was never going to allow me to lose the weight and keep it off. And I could not go through the heartbreak of losing weight again. So I accepted it. And then I started to age a little bit, and things started to change when I noticed I'd gotten up to 337 pounds was the highest weight I saw on the scale. Although I may have weighed more than that at some point. I never, I didn't get an official weight above that, but that's the highest weight I know about. So I couldn't move around like I wanted to. There was so much in life I wanted to do. I was turned away from hang gliding. Many things that you want to do in life have this 250 pound weight limit. I just couldn't move. I couldn't walk around. My feet were hurting all the time. My health was starting to crumble. There were a lot of things looming, threats of diabetes, and I was on cholesterol medication and had severe, severe sleep apnea. So I began to contemplate having bariatric surgery. And when I started to think about that, I discovered GLP-1 medications. I started taking Mounjaro. And I knew, though, that I didn't want to just take a medicine and turn off the switch of food noise or whatever those medications do to fix. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not an expert to speak about it. I only personally experienced it. I knew that I had to figure out what was going on with me emotionally. Like, why was I so attached to being 337 pounds? Because on some level, I knew that there had to be a part of me that wanted that, or I would have figured it out way before 49 years old, or at the time, 47 years old. And so I wanted to figure that out. I wanted to figure out like what emotional coping, like where did I pick up that emotional coping skill of food? How could I get rid of it? How could I promise myself to take care of myself and not regain weight? I didn't want to just do a magic bullet and then regain the weight. I knew I couldn't take it. So I decided to make a podcast because I felt like, all right, I am going to figure this out and I'm not going to gatekeep these answers. I was very vulnerable and I shared like the actual real-time process of losing 100 pounds with GLP-1 medications in 11 months. And then I did have gastric bypass, and I've lost another 75 pounds or so since that. So I've more than halved. Like I weigh less than half of my original body weight. My BMI is 27, and I started at 54.
Wow.
Yeah. So my life has totally changed, and I am so passionate about giving people hope because I was one of those people. I was like, I could never. I still look in the mirror and I'm like, this can't be me. Like, wow, you can do it. Your body can do what you want it to do. There's tools to help you. And it's a mind, body, spirit thing. And you have to get all three things going in the same direction. That might mean medical help. That might mean counseling. And that might mean finding some spiritual practice to lean on. But that was the answer for me.
When you say you had to kind of do some soul searching and figure out what the benefits to weighing over 300 pounds were, what did you come up with?
So the big number one thing for me is that I, just because of various trauma throughout my life, I felt safer in the world as a 337 pound woman. And I'll tell you, now that I'm skinny, so to speak, I have experienced things that I know wouldn't have happened to me in a larger body. So it's not that I was imagining that. there are many ways in which a person is safer weighing over 300 pounds than they are weighing under 200 pounds. But it's a trade-off, because the whole thing started for me with discovering self-love. And part of self-love is being honest with yourself. And because I had just chosen to accept my larger body and love it, I really didn't allow myself to think about the health consequences of being 337 pounds. I didn't let myself look at anything, read anything. I didn't want to know. And so when I started looking at that, I discovered that I was at risk, a higher risk for 13 different types of cancer, that people with obesity are at a higher risk of dying of any cause, any cause, and that it takes up to 13 years off of your life. Those are just three things, but there's many, many others. But I felt like, okay, so maybe I'm safer from kidnapping or violence from another person, but I'm not safer from all these other things. So what's the real threat in my life? Like on the podcast, I have my daughter who's a larger woman, and she's brilliant and bold. And she says, you know, I said, yeah, I felt like if you're going to try to kidnap me into your white van, good luck. All I have to do is drop dead weight and you're not getting anywhere. And she says, yeah, it's a two-man job, you know, like, and that is very real. That is very true. I am lighter now. I'm easier. But also what I've discovered is I'm a lot faster.
Right.
So letting go of what I thought was the framework of my life. I thought that in order to be safe, I had the best route to safety was to weigh over 300 pounds. On some level, this wasn't conscious, because trust me, for most of my adult life, I wanted desperately to be thin on a conscious level, but subconsciously there was a lot holding me back. And what my daughter calls fat vantages in the podcast, we go into those. But you know, I was very sexy. I was a very curvy, like I was lucky to be proportioned in a way that is perceived by society to be sexy. I had a really nice bottom that I miss dearly. And I had to decide that I could give up my identity as a plus size woman, because I also think I liked being a part of that club. Like I was unapologetic, you know, this is my size, this is my space, this is who I am. And giving that up and kind of feeling like I was conforming felt like a betrayal of myself. So making new thought patterns around this stuff, it's hard to do. And you have to be really, you have to really get real with yourself in order to do that. Like on any level, do I think this to be true? And then find new ways to frame it. And some of it, I had to just take a dive at, you know, like the safety thing, I didn't know, you know, I thought I was just giving, I was going to have to feel my way through in this new body, which I'm still working on, and trust myself to keep myself safe, you know, as best I can. And, but what I've, you know, what I've already realized is that, like, you know, now if I'm crossing the street and a car is coming a little too fast, it's nothing for me to pick up my pace and jog across, where before I would have been at, it was hard for me to do any sort of speed. So I'm safer in different ways and more vulnerable in different ways. It's a trade.
You mentioned that you discussed the fat vantages on your podcast. Aside from safety, what are some others that people tend to identify with?
So one thing that, and this is a big one for my daughter, she talks a lot about this, is that you feel like it's kind of a barometer for other people's genuine feelings toward you. So it's like, I don't know if I can say naughty words on this, but a bull bleep detector. You know, because there are, but the flip side of that is that all of us, and this is something that I've had to work through, like even thin people, people that have been thin their whole lives, who have no idea what it's like to live in a larger body, are subjected, women, girls, are subjected to the same torture over their bodies that we were, that I am. So just because a person may not treat me the same because of my size doesn't make them a bad person. They are subjected to the same societal fat phobic brainwashing that we've all been through. So yes, it ruled out people who were shallow and all of that. But at the other, on the other hand, like, aren't we all trying to undo things that we've learned that aren't the greatest? And then for me particularly, this is very personal and hard to talk about, actually, but I'm going to share, is that, as I mentioned, I had, you know, I grew up in a home with addiction, and my way of coping was, like I said, to be perfect. I would go to school and get straight A's, and, you know, I would be the kid that got picked when the teacher walked out to keep an eye on everyone. And if there was an essay contest, mine got chosen, and I was a captain of this and the president of that every time. And it was like, I was getting so much attention, right? Like, for these sort of elements. And this was all just a cover for how terrible I felt. Like, because kids developmentally blame everything on themselves. Like, whatever is happening is definitely my fault. Like, my mom is behaving this way, it's definitely my fault. I had no idea she was using drugs. So I just thought it was because I was annoying and terrible and intolerable. And this is why she's so angry or whatever. And so my being perfect at home felt, that was how I could survive. But at school, it made me look like so special, right? Mm-hmm. But that was intensely uncomfortable for me. And I know that might sound strange, but because on the inside, I felt like a piece of crap. And on the outside, to be getting attention and praise all the time, and all the success that people measure when you're a kid, like, oh yeah, great. You know, everyone's like, oh, this is great. But on the inside, I'm like, no, but you don't even know me. I'm terrible. If you knew me, you would know how bad I am. And being fat was like my apology to the world. Hmm. Like, I'm not a threat to you. Like, you don't want my life. Trust me. I'm fat. Like, you know, I'm also poor. Like, I'm working through identifying, like, you know, having money and being thin, like, was just too much. I didn't deserve that. Hmm. And so figuring that out and pinpointing it, and really, like, it makes me want to cry right now. Like, thinking for my former self that I lived this way deep into my 40s after raising four children, that I didn't think I deserved to be pretty and smart and nice, well-liked, and how dare I be thin, or how dare I accumulate a savings account? You know what I mean? Like, those are things that I just felt like were out of my grasp. And to make, you know, as much as we try it not to be this way, in some spaces, there's just a lot of competition. Like, you don't want your friend to be worried that her husband is going to be attracted to you. You don't want to have a woman, if I'm trying to connect with someone, I don't want her to be jealous of me in any way. And because here I am, like, doing all the perfectionist people pleasery things that get recognized as great, I felt like this is one way I can make myself smaller, is by making myself bigger.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that.
I want to take a quick break from the episode to tell you about a company I've been impressed by for years. Thrive Market is an online shopping platform that offers thousands of products at 25 to 50% off retail prices. For just $60 a year, you get access to a wide variety of premium pantry staples, supplements, beauty products, and home goods at unbeatable prices. To put things in perspective, I save about $20 to $30 per shipment, which means my annual membership fee pays for itself after just two orders. My favorite part about Thrive Market is that for every paid membership, they donate a membership to a low-income family, veteran, or teacher. So not only do you save money on your purchases, but you also make healthy products accessible to everyone. To read my full Thrive Market review, steal my shopping list of over 150 items, and save additional money on your first order, visit thehealthinvestment.com/Thrive Market, or just click through the link in the show notes. Now, back to the episode.
You mentioned so much of this was in your subconscious, and now you're conscious, obviously, about so many of these things and can speak about them. But I'm curious, how does one go about uncovering these beliefs that seem so important on this journey if they're in your subconscious? Is this something that you recommend working through with a therapist, or, you know, is that kind of like the first step so that you can work on addressing these issues and dealing with the identity change that will make the weight stay off long term?
Yes. I mean, I'm a therapist. I always recommend therapy. I think everyone can benefit from finding the right therapist. But I don't think that's the only way. So when I began tuning in and realizing that I didn't have self-love, which I think is the first step, like, I thought I did love myself. And then I tuned in to my inner critic. I thought, do I have an inner critic? And I started paying attention and I was like, whoa, I'm really mean to myself. My inner critic loved to say, who do you think you are? And so I went in that direction. Like in our minds, in our society, we run away from thoughts like that. Like, oh, we're going to shut that down. Let me have another cigarette break. Where's my second glass of wine? Give me those cupcakes. Or whatever your, you know, slot machines, whatever it is you do to run away from yourself. That's what I did. I was like food number one, shopping number two, and at times intimate partners, like would be a great distraction, like a new relationship or some sort of thing like that. And so when those feelings of who do you think you are would arise, I would just immediately try to turn it off and run. And, when you do the opposite, when you turn and face it and say, wait, what are you talking about? Like, what is who you think you are? You know, what does that mean? And you really like let yourself just simmer in that, like sit mm-hmm. in it and be like, okay, where does this come from? That's where I found my answers. Like I really pinpointed this age, and this is true, like just scientifically, the inner critic starts to emerge around second grade. So like, what was going on in your life and how were you coping with it? Like for me, one of my earliest memories was my fifth birthday, which was my golden birthday. My mother had left me and my brother with my dad for months. And so there was no party, no presents. We were very poor. My teeth were all black. I had rotten black teeth. And remember, I felt because of the influence of drugs on my mother, I felt annoying and bad. And then I had the black teeth to kind of match that, like the outer ugliness matched what I felt was outer ugliness matched what was inside ugly. And children develop this inner critic around second grade, first grade, something like that. For me, it was a tad earlier. I had to be very mature and hyper alert in my household. But this memory of my birthday, you know, my dad picked me up from school with a rose and, you know, those Hostess cupcakes with the white swirl on top. And because it was my birthday, I didn't have to give one to my brother. I could eat both cupcakes. And that sounds so sad. Like here's this little rotten teeth, 5-year-old girl who doesn't get a party or a present. She just gets a Hostess cupcake. That sounds like a sad story, but I was thrilled, like thrilled. I remember it. Like I just remember walking out of the school building, holding these two cupcakes and looking down at them and just being elated. And so food was my absolute savior, my comfort, my everything feel good and safe from a very, because if this was that deeply embedded by 5 years old, I, you know, and the black teeth come from falling asleep with the bottle in your mouth. So I'm imagining that this was pretty much always my comfort. And then talk about a fat vantage, you know, when I first started taking the GLP-1, I went and got, I was having a very stressful day and I went and got candy bars and I ate half of a king size Snicker and half of a king size Kit Kat. But because of the GLP-1, I was able to actually feel the way that impacted my body and I felt the relaxation come over me. And I was stunned because when you're just going at the speed of light and food is your coming, food really, another thing is that I think food facilitated all the amazing things I've done in my adult life because I really used it to keep going and cope with stress. And I managed to do a lot of amazing things. I could tell you all day the great, you know, variety of things I've accomplished because of Ben and Jerry's. But when I was able to tune in and feel that relaxation, I felt how powerful that was. And then I imagined 5-year-old me, 10-year-old me, 15-year-old me, you know, coping in this way. I'm like, yeah, this was really effective. And how am I going to move forward in life without that? Because no GLP-1 medication, no surgery is going to fix my need to cope by running away from what I'm feeling and ignoring myself. And so how can I address that?
Along the way, since food played such a big part for stress relief, relaxation, was it really important to find replacements then and consciously work on, I'm going to do this non-food related thing right now instead of turning to food? And what did that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about this and I do think it's important, but, and not, but, and I think what, when we're talking about it, what we're still trying to do is avoid the feelings.
Mm.
Like if you pick a, like, let's say a healthy one, like go running, instead of eating this candy bar, because I'm really stressed today, I'm going to go for a run. Well, that's great. That's healthy and good for you. And when are you going to take time to actually feel the feelings?
Mm-hmm.
That is where the healing lied
yeah.
For me.
I never know. Yeah.
I get corrected about it all.
That's fine.
So that was kind of the magic for me, was actually like not finding another way to cope except to let myself feel it. Because when I started doing that, what I realized is that my brain had really learned to cope with stress in this way, so much so and so effectively that I didn't even feel it. Like I didn't feel the stress or the anger or the frustration or the loneliness or the not good enoughness. I didn't feel it at all. Because mm-hmm. before I could even consciously feel something, the trigger to eat would be put in place. And so then I would give in, I would eat the thing and not have to feel that at all. And so really what I did was I said, okay, when I have a craving, I'm going to stop and say, what's going on? Like, and most of the time I was afraid. And this is one of the tools that I teach my clients. What are you ashamed or afraid of? So when mm-hmm. there is an intense, not just a, ooh, that cookie over there looks yummy, I want one, because I still eat a cookie now and then. But when there's an intense feeling that feels like life and death, if I don't get some sugar, like, okay, Joy, what is happening? Like what's going on in your environment? And then the two magic questions, what are you afraid of? What are you ashamed of? Because almost always I found that it went back to one of those two things. And usually what I was afraid of was being found out that I'm not good enough. I'm afraid of not being good enough, or I'm ashamed of not being good enough.
And then when you confronted the feelings, did the urge to eat dissipate eventually, or what comes next? Because I've spoken with a lot of clients who are like, okay, then what? Like, I'm sitting with this feeling, I'm feeling it. What then?
Yeah. So then that's where some healthy alternatives can come into play. Like I personally, one of the major important things for me is that I allowed myself meditation and yoga and mindfulness just in general. Like, but I was one of those people that was moving at the speed of light away from myself and silence, meditation, yoga. I hated it. If you would have told me that I was literally going to be teaching people how to meditate, I would have laughed at you. Yeah. Like, no way. And now, you know, I teach people how to start a meditation practice. I'm not an expert meditator. I'm not like in an ashram doing all the things, but I can teach you how to go from hating meditation to starting and enjoying it and getting the benefits. So that is for me where it's at. So there has to be this like emotional healing piece, the mental piece, like the cognitive, like managing your thoughts. And then there's this doctor piece, the emotion, the physical health, like what medications are we using to address your hormone disorders or whatever metabolic disorder you have? And are you going to need surgery to get you where you need to be and all of the medical things? And mm-hmm. are you exercising? Are you moving your body? And then there's the spirit piece for me, which gives me the peace and the stillness. Like now, when a situation arises, I've learned to be the observer of my own life. So I can just take a deep breath and be like, wow, this is intense. Like you're really reacting to this and it'll pass. And there's an innate peacefulness about me that makes it where I don't have to frantically search for anything. It's not perfect. It's not every day. I still take, so after my gastric bypass, which was 7 months ago, I think 7 months, I take a low dose of GLP-1 medication every few weeks to help with food noise, because just even as much as I've gotten my spirit in line and my body and my mind, there's still a metabolic disorder going on. Like I, as a person that is barely overweight, technically, medically, BMI wise, I will always have the disease of obesity. My body is never going to stop trying to make me gain the weight again. This feels like destruction to my body because I've halved myself and it's panicking. And so I am aware that I can't do this on my own, that I also need medical intervention, that me working on my mind, body, spirit is wonderful and needed, but also the medical piece is so important. And also, like, how am I giving myself nutrition? Am I having cravings because have I eaten? Have I indulged a little bit too much in sugar lately? Or am I not getting enough protein? Am I not getting satisfying food or enough fiber? So it's like all of this medical management that has to take place too.
I love that you're talking about the tools available, the medical tools. And there's been so much research, even just in the last year, placing obesity as a disease and something that requires more medical attention rather than just eat less, move more, you know, like these like trite things we've heard in the past that are not actually helpful. Would you, do you feel, have been able to get to the place you are today without the weight loss surgery and the GLP-1 medications? And can you describe more about how those tools don't need to be shameful and, you know, they can help just like any other medication we take?
Absolutely. I'm so happy to talk about that. And that's part of, you know, in the Easy Way Out, the podcast, it's like part of the reason that I did that was to give voice to this, because there's all of these competing things, these messages, right? Like, we're supposed to love ourselves as we are and be body positive, but here I am intentionally trying to lose weight. And so how do I reconcile those things? And what about the easy way out? Like, everyone, you know, I still, just yesterday, someone said that by having the surgery, I robbed myself of the victory. I'm like, okay, that's your opinion. That's fine. Like, it really doesn't move me from my space of like, all right, I get to go in to any store and buy a size 6 jeans. Like, I know what that has done for my life.
Yeah.
I don't care what tools I had to use to get there. And also, by the way, I still have to make good choices for myself every single day. So to answer your question right off the top, do I think that I could be where I'm at right now without those tools? No, I wouldn't. I would not. I could be here without the surgery. It would have taken longer. The surgery has definitely sped things up, and I do not regret the surgery at all. It has been a wonderful tool. And actually kind of an education for me too, because I was just explaining to a friend, like, some of my friends are starting to be like, well, don't lose any more weight. You're too skinny. And I have a BMI of 27, like, and I'm like pretty cut in the places where you can see it, you know? so I'm not in danger of wasting away, but people are starting to get nervous because as far as averages go, people are pretty large these days. And having a surgery really taught me like that we as a people eat way more than we need to, because when I don't eat enough, which hasn't happened in months, because it's an education, it's a process. When you have gastric bypass, the amount of food you can eat is very small. So you have to be very mindful about every bite. And I know exactly what it feels like when I'm not eating enough and my battery is empty. It literally is like a battery dying in a little robotic toy. Like, it's like, you just literally power down. I mean, like, sleep is irresistible. So that is not happening to me. I am getting enough food, and I literally eat, I would say, like the equivalent of my fist at any given meal is the most I can fit. And that is actually plenty. Like, I'm getting enough nutrition and calories by doing that with a couple of little healthy snacks. Like, and I do indulge. I still, you know, we just had Mardi Gras, I ate king cake, had a few pieces of king cake throughout the season. At Christmas, I had some sweets. I mean, I still do eat like a normal person. It's just a little more mindfully and much smaller amount. So I learned that from the surgery, I was able to really recognize how much I was overeating, even when it didn't seem like I was. Like, with the GLP-1 medication, I was eating way less portion size, but still way more than I eat now. So that's been interesting.
Outside of hosting this podcast, I work as a nutrition coach specializing in evidence-based sustainable weight loss. If you're ready to stop yo-yo dieting and start living a healthy, active lifestyle you're proud of, I'd love to work with you in one of my programs. Unlike restrictive, one-size-fits-all diets that only provide short-term results, I help you adopt science-backed nutrition and lifestyle habits that work for your unique likes, dislikes, and time constraints so you can lose weight permanently, have high energy throughout the day, feel completely in control of cravings, and stay consistent long-term. To learn more, visit thehealthinvestment.com or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Health Investment.
And I think there's an overwhelming message out there with the, these GLP-1 medications are becoming more and more common and more popular. Even populations who don't necessarily need them are taking them. I'm thinking the whole celebrity craze of pre-Oscars, whatever. And it's kind of this joke meme now of who's on Ozempic. But you also speak about the healthy lifestyle changes that need to come in conjunction with this, that even though people may speak about it as if it's this magic pill, it's not. So it's in terms of that person's comment, it's not that you gave yourself the shots, got the surgery, and you've done nothing else in terms of the victory component. I mean, you work every day still at these lifestyle habits. And so I'd love if you could speak more to that you are still doing the things in conjunction. These are just tools that are helping you throughout the process.
Absolutely. I still, on Mardi Gras Day, I showed up to the parade route and had a friend who had set up, and she had finger sandwiches and donuts. Like white bread, finger sandwiches and donuts. And I was hungry. I had a couple of healthy snacks in my bag, some almonds and a little chicken jerky stick or whatever. And so I knew that I had some food for later on, but I needed to eat something. So I picked up three of the finger sandwiches and I ate all of the turkey and like one of the triangles of bread. I kind of made it into like a weird, like lumpy food, And I ate, about an eyeball sized piece of, it's hard to describe to people, a piece of an apple fritter. And I was totally satisfied until it was snack time later for my nuts and my chicken jerky. And I feel like that's a great example of someone who's watching what they eat, who's mindful that what you eat matters, and who's not trying to live on a crazy diet. Like I did not freak out about there being white bread. I didn't pack a whole lunch just for myself to have to carry around. I knew that I would trust myself to find some way to put with my snack something that would make it work. There would be, some sort of food truck or something that I could find some protein. And that is the kind of decision, whether I've had surgery or whether I use GLP-1s or not. And that isn't because I want, I love my size six jeans. It's really fun to be a size six. I've never been a size six in my life. And, but that's not why I did that. I ate that turkey without all the bread because I knew that not much was going to fit. If I ate the whole triangle of sandwich with the bread, I might have gotten two. But the way I did it, I got three times the amount of protein as one little finger sandwich. Mm-hmm. I did it because my body needs protein, because I'm building muscle, because I care about myself and I love myself and I want to be healthy. I want to live long. I actually have started following some women on Instagram who do amazing things with their bodies, like upside down headstands with splits. And when I was in high school, I did those things. And I'm like, I want to do that. I want to be a 50-year-old woman who can lift herself off the ground with her arms and, do amazing things. And so I'm going to eat the turkey and not the white bread or just a tiny bit, it's about all of that. And also I exercise, but I'm not a gym rat. I don't like, hanging out in the gym for an hour and a half a day. So I go twice a week to hit the elliptical for 40 minutes. I go once a week. I do once a week weightlifting for a half an hour. There's a special kind of system that does that. I do that once a week. I do yoga class once a week. And the other days I take a walk with my dogs. Like I keep it interesting, but that's because I think the movement is good for my physical and mental health, not because I need to get skinny. When everything was about getting skinny, all the times that I lost weight before, I was never successful. So this time I've been really conscious of falling in love with the process of taking care of myself. Because when you have, like I did, I probably totally had about 190 pounds to lose, because I think I have maybe about 15 more pounds to go. And when you have that much weight to lose, I mean, I lost 100 pounds and was still a fat person. Like I was still plus sized. I still had the struggle of moving around uncomfortably after losing 100 pounds. So it feels like you're losing. It feels like you're not getting anywhere. But if your metric is, am I taking care of myself? Am I having fun? Am I doing what's right for my body? Am I appreciating my body? Am I nourishing my body? And if that's how you're measuring success, then you can be successful after one day.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
yes, today I love myself. Today I'm taking care of myself. I borrow a lot from the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous because of my background in addiction work. And, you know, just for today, I'm not going to go to the donut shop and eat four donuts or hide from my family that I ate donuts on the way and then eat more in front of them, or obsess about how many pieces of cake I can have at a wedding without people noticing. You know, these are the kinds of things that I was living with before, and the shame that goes with that. And that is success. Like, right now I have, you know, this doughy belly with extra skin and still have some weight to lose, but I am having so much fun figuring out what my body can do and taking care of it, that that part is just like a side benefit. It's not the focus.
I had another guest on who spoke about what you're referencing. Let's say it might take you a year to hit the goal weight you want to be at. And so it can just feel like the slog of, oh my gosh, it's coming off so slow and it's nothing's working as fast as I want it to. But she said you can feel better literally in hours and especially overnight. So if you focus on what are the things that are going to help me feel good, those are the same things that are going to drive the weight loss, and you get immediate results in this world where we want immediate Amazon Prime results for everything.
That's right.
And so you just reframe, you know, what is going to help me feel my best today? Is it going for a walk? Is it having more turkey and less bread? You know, all just framing every decision around that. And then you can get immediate results. And that is a cool way to think about it. Yeah.
It is. And your body does respond. Like, it's not just about even a mental trick. You know, I physically felt better after eating that turkey. Like, I felt nourished and, you know, solid instead of sleepy and sluggish, you know.
Right.
There is a big difference.
So
and
many.
Then also a big thing about that is that the time is going to pass whether you do the thing or not. Mm-hmm. Like, this has taken me a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I could have not been losing weight at a snail's pace for a year and a half, or I could, but the year and a half is going to pass. So
absolutely.
When it feels slow, just remind yourself, like, well, this time is what it is. The time is passing. So you can either be losing 2 pounds a week for a long, long time, or you can just be living and not losing 2 pounds a week for a long, long time.
So many of the themes you've talked about today come back to self-love. And earlier in the conversation, you were saying, you know, there's this body positivity movement. There's Lizzo saying, you know, love your body just the way it is. You don't have to change. And I think what a beautiful message in terms of we need that. We need to respect and appreciate and love people at all sizes. So this is such a great movement in so many ways. But then I think, like you said, you kind of, especially as you age, I think I've spoken with other people who say, yes, when I was younger, I had no health issues and I was fully into this and embracing it. And that was the badge I wore of I'm not going to change a thing. But then as health things start to catch up with you, you start to have this thought of, wait a second, is staying this way and loving my body as it is now and not changing it at all the healthiest thing to do? And then how do you reconcile that? I mean, you've kind of touched on it. I know Adele comes to mind. She's gotten so much pushback for her weight loss because she used to be the spokesperson or one of them for this community. And then she lost the weight. And I mean, people have been horrendous to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's said, you know, I feel better. And I can't even imagine being such a public figure and doing this. Can you speak more to that kind of reconciliation of self-love? Yes, but the body positive, like where does that all fit in?
Yeah, that's hard because I personally feel like now when I walk into a space, like I have since I've lost weight, been in at a party with people that I didn't know was in a professional setting, and they made fun of someone that had been on a plane next to a 300-pound person. And they made fun of that person, not knowing that I had been 300 pounds, not, you know, 8 months before this encounter. And, you know, like walking around, people don't know that I was ever that size and that I have this extra sort of sensitivity and compassion and experience that I relate to people who don't look the way that society thinks that we should all look, you know, or that we think we should look. And I think it all goes back to being honest with yourself. You know, I know many women who are larger, who are, I think I want to put a pin in this too. There's a big difference between weighing 200 pounds, being plus size, but you're active, you go hiking, your mobility is not limited, your joints feel good. 200 pounds might be a very healthy weight for a person who's taller, who's active. There's a big difference between that and between me being 5'6" and 337 pounds with limited mobility and, you know, where exercise was too painful to accomplish. So I think there's a big difference there, but also to go back to self-love and say, what do I want for my life? Like, can we strip away all the voices, the fat phobic ones and the body positive ones? Can we strip away all that? Can we strip away? Because this is a huge thing for me. My body is not for other people to consume. My body is for me to use, to go around this planet and do life in. That it is not here so that it can look pretty. It's an ornament. My body is an instrument, not an ornament. So if you can be honest with yourself and strip away the desire, like, for example, I used to have this big, round, perfect butt when I was a bigger lady. It is gone. Like, the skin is sagging, it's pretty flat. And I look at it and I think, man, I really wish, you know, I had that. But what that was about was that when I walked away, I knew that some people might be looking at that, you know, bottom that I had. That was getting validation from other people. That is a very different thing than I need to lose weight so that I can move around the earth in a more free way. There's like, you have to be able to get honest and dig down, like drill down deep to what your desires really are. If it is your desire to look like Kim Kardashian and turn heads, and that's what you feel your life purpose is, like to be beautiful and to use that as a platform to fulfill your purpose, then go for it. Like I say, awesome. Have all the plastic surgery, lose weight for that reason, if that's where your heart lies, because some people are here to do that in life and that's great for them. That wasn't my deepest desire. My deepest desire had to do with being able to be mobile, to climb mountains. You know, I want to do a handstand and a split in the air because I used to be able to do that. And I want my body to do that again. So like I had different motivations. I think drilling down, tuning out the voices of like fat shaming and this urge that we have, especially for women and girls, that our bodies are meant to be looked at. I mean, studies will show you that people are nicer to you when you're thin, you know, men, particularly deem our value by how attractive we are to them, you know, and that sort of stuff. Like, so if you can work on tuning into yourself enough to know what are your true motivations and desires and tune that out, then you can move with confidence forward. So if someone says to me, you betrayed the body positivity movement, I say, I hear you. And I understand that I struggled with that. I had to do what was right for me. And I totally respect that you're doing what's right for you. I just, it's going to have to be, this is my life and my truth, and I'm going to have to do what's right for me. And that I think if you're really digging deep and finding a basis in self-love and your true heart's desire for your life, those kinds of criticisms won't bother you. They won't make you change your mind for sure. Like nothing is going to make me decide, oh, well, I should probably just gain the weight because I was a traitor.
Because somebody on social media said.
Yeah. Or even in real life. I mean, you know, part of the thing I did on my podcast was that I felt like I was betraying my daughter by intentionally losing weight because she makes the choice to basically thumb her nose up at beauty standards and say, no, like I am going to live in this larger body and it's my right to do that and screw all of you. And for me to do that felt like I was abandoning her. To have surgery to lose weight or to take a medicine to lose weight or to be excited about being a size 6 felt like a betrayal of my baby girl who's so beautiful and bright. And so working through that with her was like at the sort of very real on the line, you know, practice. And we did literally the first time ever we had talked about it was the recording of the podcast, which was a 3.5 hour conversation that I edited down to about 40 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was serious.
Talk about tough editing.
It was like, how did I, Yeah, it was tough, but I really had a message. I want parents of larger children to hear what my kids have to say about what I did right and what I did not do right, handling their overweight as kids and my own overweight. Like, I was always trying to get skinny when my kids were little, and that impacted them. And they're very honest with me about how it impacted them. And I think people need to hear that. I think they do.
Yeah. Well, one of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment?
It's a great question and such an important one. That every single thing that I do now is an investment in myself. And that is how I see it. I think there could not be a more important investment than in your health. Like I said earlier, you know, and my son beautifully ended the podcast episode by saying, like, I don't care. He said, I don't care. I'm going to cry. But he said, I don't care what you look like, but I want those 13 years. And so I'm investing so that I can have those 13 years. That's what I want. I don't care about and not having a Kim K butt. I don't care about the size of my jeans. Ultimately, I do care about those 13 years. I care about being able to sit on the ground and play with my grandchildren one day when they come to visit us on this planet. In this life. And I'm investing in that. And it could not be more important to me. It is the most important thing.
I'm so grateful for your honesty and wisdom throughout this episode. I know a lot of people are going to benefit it. So just thank you so much for being here. Where can listeners follow and find you and connect with you outside of this podcast?
Great. Thank you so much for providing the space. I think I really wish more people were talking about weight loss and weight management the way that you do. I think it's amazing. And your work is needed.
Thank you.
So I am on I'm on all of the social media sites, but I'm really active on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And my handle is DrJoyBracey at Dr. Joy Bracey. My website is drjoybracey.com. And my podcast is The Easy Way Out, WEIGH, with Dr. Joy Bracey, anywhere you listen to podcasts. And I tend to be very responsive to messages. If anyone needs me, has ideas they think I need to hear, I'm open to the nudges from the universe. So anyone listening, you can do it. If I can do this, you can do this, period.
Well, and I can't wait for everybody to connect with you in one or more of those places so they can learn even more. And again, I just thank you so much for being here. And I also look forward to staying connected with you off air.
Definitely, definitely. Thank you so much.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.